Welcome to Expert Views on ADR Ever, a podcast about simplifying the traditional African method of settling disputes or the appropriate dispute resolution ADR in a bid to attract more users to settle their disputes or conflicts with mediation, unbonds, collaborative law, arbitration, restorative justice, early dispute resolution, negotiation, conciliation, and of course, early neutral evaluation. My name is Chinwe Ebuneke, the marketing liaison of Mumbun State 2024, American Bar Association Dispute Resolution, and the host of Expert Views on ADR Ever Video Podcast Show. I'm delighted to welcome Professor Sharon Press. She is the director of the Mitchell Hamline School of Law Dispute Resolution Institute, DRI. She teaches mediation and negotiation in both online and in-person formats. Professor Sharon is the co-president of Community Mediation in Minnesota. She also served as the chair of the Minnesota State Bar Association ADR Section Council and was a member of the Minnesota ADR Ethics Board. She wears many hats. I've left the link to her profile. Welcome to the show, Prof.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so very much for honoring the invitation. So without further ado, the first question is, can you elaborate on the background and purpose of the Mitchell Hamline School of Law Dispute Resolution Institute, DRI, and its operational methods?
Yeah. So there are many different things to say about the purpose behind the Dispute Resolution Institute. So I would say that, you know, first and foremost, we have a connection to and responsibility for our students. Okay. And our students are both our law students, so people who are enrolled at Mitchell Hamline to earn a JD degree, but also we offer a certificate for students who are not Mitchell Hamline Law School students. And those people tend to come from a variety of different backgrounds. So many of them are professionals that already are working in a adjacent field to dispute resolution and want to have a little bit more of a formal credential for doing the work, and also are interested really in studying more about the theory that underscores dispute resolution or appropriate dispute resolution or alternative dispute resolution. And then there are some students in the certificate program who are pursuing a graduate degree, like in organizational leadership or in an EDD, an education advanced degree. Yeah. And for those folks, it's a nice additional piece to go along with that degree that they're completing that gives them a little bit of a deeper understanding and dive into what is out there. Mm-hmm. And then so from that student perspective, we offer classes, we offer study abroads, we offer a certificate program for our JD students and our non-JD students. We work with the ADR student group. So there's a whole host of those kinds of things, clinics, externships, competitions. But I'll leave that aside for a moment and just put on the table. And then I know that I don't want to do all of the talking. So beyond the student focused work we do, we also do some community focused work. And I would put those into two different sort of streams of work we do. One relates to legal educators and people who are interested in learning more about dispute resolution. So we have a press, we have a publication arm. It's called DRI Press. We publish works. Our mission really is to publish works that are really important to the field, but might not be commercially successful, and so they may not get a publisher to put them out. So the goal of DRI Press is to make these works available generally speaking, for free. We offer them as downloads on our DRI Press website. We also do sell them on Amazon if people would prefer to get them as, you know, a real book. But really the goal is for people to have access. We also have just kicked off a new activity called the Laboratory for Advancing Dispute Resolution Skills Teaching. And under that umbrella, we're really pulling together some activities that we have been regularly doing to support the advancement of pedagogy. How do we teach dispute resolution? How do we create resources and, more importantly, share those resources so that everyone can advance as a result of having access to it? So that includes collecting of resources that are available for free. And the new thing that we just did is launch this website with a searchable resource share that people can search that database of resources that will be updated on a regular basis to access simulations and videos and teaching materials and assignments and et cetera. So it's another, so that's one. And then one other thing I'll mention quickly is we also have a big commitment to serving our community at large. That is not necessarily the dispute resolution community, but our local community. So we have been involved in projects running community conversations. We have a project that is still ongoing called Truth and Action, Addressing Systemic Racism in the Criminal Justice System in Minnesota, where we are working on collecting data and stories to help to create action change that unfortunately has taken way too long to happen in this country. I'll leave it there.
Thank you so very much, Prof. So I think, can you sort of simplify what ADR is before I proceed to the second question? Sorry, I should have done it. I should have asked it before we started. Question.
So it's both a simple and a complicated question, right?
Yeah.
Because it means many different things to many different people. And I think at its fundamental beginnings, ADR stands for Alternative Dispute Resolution and was meant to encompass anything other than traditional litigation.
Yeah.
And so it would include negotiation, mediation, arbitration, ombuds, mutual evaluation. So, like, you know, this really broad hodgepodge of processes that the only thing they had in common was they were not traditional litigation.
Yeah.
But people began to say, you know, it's not really the alternative to litigation, because in this country, some people may not be aware, but a very, very small fraction of situations that even get filed in court actually go to litigation. And so then people push back and said, wait a minute, this is not an alternative to dispute resolution. This is really appropriate dispute resolution. And people actually should be thinking about, how do I resolve the situation that I have in a way that makes more sense, that actually meets the needs that I have, which often, quite frankly, litigation falls far short of.
Well, thank you so very much, Paul, for that. So what were the main challenges faced during the establishment of Dispute Resolution Institute?
So I am not the first director of the Dispute Resolution Institute.
Okay.
I'm actually the fourth director of the Institute, but my colleague that I had the great fortune of working very closely with when I first arrived here, Bobby McAdoo, was the one who came up with this idea of the Dispute Resolution Institute. And I think that when she began the Institute in the, let's see, I think it was, I always forget when it exactly started, but
yeah,
it's at least 25, 30 years ago.
Oh, that's a long time.
She really had an education effort to undertake because it wasn't well known what it was going to be. As it turns out, her kind of launching the Dispute Resolution Institute coincided with Minnesota, the court system, deciding to adopt laws and rules around court-connected ADR processes. And they were in great need for training to happen. And so it was a perfect confluence of a ready-made and necessary need to be filled, and an institute that was able to fill that need. And so the beginning of the Institute very much was focused around supporting the Minnesota courts in launching the dispute resolution programs for the court system.
Okay, thank you so much, Sharon. You mentioned court-connected ADR. Is there a difference between court-connected ADR and the usual ADR?
Yeah, so court-connected ADR, I like to think of it, is generally when somehow the courts have been involved in the situation before they go to the people involved, go to an alternative or appropriate other kind of dispute resolution activity. So it may be that they have already filed a case in court, and then the court directs them or encourages them or suggests that they might want to try a different process. In Minnesota, every case that is filed, a civil case that is filed, is required to have something called the lawyers to have a meet and confer meeting. And that meeting is for them specifically to discuss what dispute resolution process they're going to try prior to pursuing the case further in litigation. And generally speaking, that's going to be mediation, although it could be early neutral evaluation or arbitration or one of the other processes. And the contrast with that is I'll start with mediation, although also with arbitration, I could say more about. In mediation, the beginnings of that were very much around community empowerment and individuals having an option, having an ability to resolve and talk about what was going on outside of court. Like, they weren't ever going to be in court. And so community mediation programs, neighborhood justice centers, those kinds of activities really embrace the voluntary nature of mediation, that people decide, you know what, I'm having an issue, I'd like to try to work it out. What can I do? Let me find someone who can help me and the other person figure out what do we want to do. And it had nothing to do with the courts. So, and then we also have, early on, a stream of arbitration usage where in contracts, people decide before there's ever a dispute, in the event we have a dispute, we're going to go to arbitration. It has nothing to do with the courts because they have steered it away. So that's how I would differentiate.
Okay, thank you so very much. So has the Institute sort of improved contributed significantly to improving access to justice in Minnesota.
I'd like to believe that is true. I think that it's been an important part of how we see our role. And I think that that's a steady stream that kind of runs through the work we do, that we are very, that our coursework really talks a lot about justice and has the students not only learn how to practice these processes, but really to think critically about what's the theory? Why is that the theory? What does that mean in order to implement and follow through on justice? Our community projects have very much been around justice focused. And as I said, you know, our early start was supporting the courts in trying to figure out how do they implement in a really positive way that's filled with integrity, new rules around this processes.
Okay, thank you so very much, Prof. So what are the most significant achievements of the Institute?
It's also an interesting question. And for me, I've been the director of the Institute since 2009. And I would say that there are several things that stand out in my tenure, and then I'll talk a little bit about some of the other tenures. Okay. I think the connection that we have with our local community, the community conversations that we ran after the death of Philando Castile, the Truth in Action Project, the sense of wanting to give something back to our community and to offer what we can do in terms of facilitating, gathering, that kind of work. We've also done some really helpful and important symposia, including one on evictions and housing and that crisis, and what can we as dispute resolution professionals do to really make that system a bit more functional and a bit more just. And I'm very, very pleased that it's not only as a result of the symposium, but the work that we have been involved with community partners has really been a sea change in how that system works and the access that people have to resources, both legal resources and financial resources, to turn the tide there. I'm extraordinarily proud of the students that we've graduated and the work that they have done. It just feels like a way to magnify out. And then, you know, DRI Press, I think, has really been just an amazing program activity. And I'm thrilled that we've been able to bring to the fore such really, really wonderful publications that have made a difference in people's lives, and to do that in a way that is cost effective, and generally, as I said, almost all of the titles are free to folks. And I'm super excited about where the skills lab is going to go.
Oh, thank you so very much. So what are the main benefits for students that are or would want to register or become a part of DRI Institute?
Yeah, it's a great question. Thank you. So we did actually do a survey a few years back of our graduates to say, well, what was the most valuable thing from having pursued this certificate? And it was really interesting, the feedback we got. You know, to a person, they all were very supportive of and appreciative and grateful for what they learned in the certificate and had many ways of saying how they have used and the skills that they learned. And it was also pretty clear to us that the value of completing the certificate, there were really two. One was having the skills, getting that sort of deeper dive into really thinking about and practicing problem solving and embedding that in their being.
Yeah.
And the second one was being able to have a way to talk about their commitment to problem solving and their understanding of it and what that would mean for them as an employee. So it wasn't that you know, anybody was saying, do you have a certificate from the Dispute Resolution Institute? No. And the certificate itself, like nobody was, you know, asking, you know, can we see that credential or whatnot? But many people reported to us when they went for an interview, that was a conversation starter. That they would say, tell me about this certificate that you earned. And they were able then to talk about in a way that could really show and highlight what this would mean for them as an employee. And that turns out to be, I think, one of the greatest values.
Awesome. Thank you so very much, Sharon, for pointing that out on this show. I also want to ask about how the Institute is promoting diversity and inclusion.
Yeah, so some folks may be aware, but many probably not, that Mitchell Hamlin did adopt the resolution to be an anti-racist law school, and we take that very seriously. So it really permeates everything we do, including through the Dispute Resolution Institute. And so we pay close attention to who are the faculty members that we are both in terms of hiring, which is a bigger school-wide thing, but also the Dispute Resolution Institute runs a summer institute and where we invite faculty in, and we're very conscious of and aware of wanting to reach out to people who come from diverse backgrounds who would be willing to teach here. I think it's important for our student body. I think it's important for us to be supporting the work of diverse practitioners. So I would say, you know, really throughout everything that we do, that goes also to the certificate, I invite or create a colloquia for our certificate students every semester. And I'm really mindful of thinking about who am I inviting for those colloquia to do those presentations and making sure that they really represent the broad spectrum of who is working in this field.
Okay, thank you so very much. Prof, I had the good fortune to visit St. Paul and also did some interviews, and most of the people that I interviewed were not familiar with ADR or its benefits. So what steps does the Institute take to educate the wider community and the community itself within St. Paul about the advantages of ADR and what ADR is essentially is?
Yeah, thank you. That's a really hard one, and I think if I were to be honest, I don't think that we do a great job yet of doing that kind of outreach.
Yeah.
One of the ways that I personally do it is I serve as co-president for Community Mediation Minnesota, which is the umbrella organization of the Community Dispute Resolution Programs. Yeah. And in that capacity, I do a lot of public speaking, and I never refuse. If anybody asks me to speak at a Rotary Club, at a school, at a community event, I always say yes. I always will meet with people, So I personally take that very seriously. That includes doing volunteer work at one of the charter schools here, that and going in and teaching the students to be conflict resolution people. So it's varied as to whether they're mediators or whether they're leaders, or depending on the year that we've been doing the project. But so it's, I don't think we've yet cracked the nut on how to really get it out into the wider community, because I think you're so correct in that way too many people, despite this being around for a very long time at this point, still don't know.
Okay, thank you so very much. So the final question is, what is the future of legal research, particularly ADR via podcast and podcast?
So say that one more time. So what is the future?
The future of legal research. Particularly in ADR via podcast or podcasting.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much. I think you know this. There's almost an unlimited number of things. I will tell you, for me personally, one of the things that I am extraordinarily interested in and have been working with colleagues Ellen Deason and Isabel Gunning for the past year or so in really thinking about what does neutrality mean in the context of mediation, and it grew out of really a questioning that I had as a result of the summer of 2020, when George Floyd was murdered, and really doing a careful thinking, both personally and professionally, what was I doing, both again personally and professionally, that was allowing this kind of thing to continue. And the Truth in Action Project grew out of that, but also an article that Ellen Deason and I wrote asking the question, mediation, colon, embedded assumptions of whiteness, of which we were pretty sure there were embedded assumptions of whiteness, but we didn't actually know fully what to do about it. And so this work on neutrality actually flows from that work that I was doing in exploration, because I think too often mediators, myself included, hide behind the cloak of neutrality or the requirement for neutrality to avoid taking on issues. And I started out by saying Mitchell Hamlin is an anti-racist law school, and you know, I think most people are familiar with Imran Kendi's formulation of this. And so if you're not actively working against racism, you are promoting it, right? You're allowing it to continue. And so what does that mean as a mediator, and how to reconcile sort of the values? Like, why is that important? And then, of course, it raises all kinds of interesting questions, because that's a very Western concept of neutrality. That is not the way everywhere in the world thinks about mediators. So what does that all mean? So, sorry, it's my interest currently in research, but I think that there's fascinating research to be done around, you know, the use of separate sessions or not, what happens in mandatory arbitration, particularly where there's contracts of adhesion. There's so much that we're just scratching the surface.
Thank you so very much, Prof. I'm so very I'm grateful for you to have, come on the show and stated all this vital information about ADR and the benefits associated with being a student at the DRI. And I would say that I believe that students that are passionate about ADR would embrace all you have stated herein, especially with the benefits associated with Dispute Resolution Institute at Mitchell Hanley University, and will register to be your student as soon as possible. thank you so very much. This is a masterclass. Thank you for
coming. Thank you so much, Jim. It was really a delight to speak with you.
Oh, same here. Thank you. You have a lovely day. Cheers.
Okay, bye.
Bye.